This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening on TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe. And welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus is on loan to us from Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. We get started today. First, I say hello to Richard and Ezra, of course, but we get started today with your Winnipeg Jets. And we'll start with last night's Jets-St. Louis Blues contest. A game that I thought the Jets probably deserved a better fate than to lose in regulation. I thought based on the style of play and the manner in which the game was going about throughout the course of the, you know, for 55 of the 60 minutes, I thought the Jets at least deserved to get to see that game go into overtime, and probably would have had it not been for that fluky game-winning goal by the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah, and you could argue which team was better in the first period. The St. Louis Blues only had 2 shots, but I thought that was kind of deceiving, Richie. There were several times in that game where the St. Louis Blues had a lot of pressure on the Jets, and they only managed 2 shots, and then Alex Steen got that early second period goal from a near impossible angle, and Andre Pavlik seemed to be cheating and ended up kind of going off of his back. Originally, I thought it was off of the post, but the Jets played a very Western-style game, Richie, against a very disciplined team. And, you know, Drew, you mentioned 55 out of the minutes, you know, the game was tied, obviously, but it was also close. That was anybody's game, and the St. Louis Blues, I probably would have given an edge to overall. The shots were pretty even, but I thought their scoring chances, Richie, were better. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, positives from that game. The Jets got a power play goal, and they seem to only get a power play goal once every 6 games. But you have to be impressed by how they played defensively. And at the end of the day, you have to, not only do you have to play an A game, you have to play an A-plus game against the St. Louis Blues and Chicago Blackhawks. But Richie, it goes back to this, okay? Against the Central Division, in 15 games, you've won 3 games. So for the Winnipeg Jets, right now, where they are in the standings, Central Division, Western Conference, you can't win 3 out of 15 games and hope to be in the playoffs this year, right? So you got 2 games coming up at home, and then you've got a couple of easy teams. Columbus, maybe not so much, but Buffalo. And you got to win some games in your Central Division, or this season could quickly be out of their reach.
Yeah, the team.
The playoffs could quickly be out of their reach.
Team of moral victories, right? I mean, you know, in a vacuum, was last night's game a solid game? Yeah, you know, they stuck with a better team. They had a chance to win at the end of the game. They gave up more scoring chances, I thought, than they had. St. Louis hit a couple posts. Tarasenko hit a post. Chris Stewart hit a post. A couple of nice glove saves by Pavlik in the third period. How tested really was Brian Elliott? I don't think much. You're trailing the fourth place team in the division, I believe 8 or 9 points. They have 4 games in hand on you. And at the end of the day, you have to start winning. You're 3-10-1 against the Central Division. And if you're a Jets fan, don't you eventually get sick of, oh, it was a good effort, you know, we came out on the other side of it? Yeah, that's great if you're 45 points registered in the standings and you lose a tough game.
Or if you're the Calgary Flames with no expectations.
Yeah, well, exactly. So what are you? So, I mean, if I'm a Jets fan, I'm probably discouraged by last night's game. St. Louis came in here, won a road game. Pavlik let in a weak goal. I thought overall, otherwise, he was pretty solid. The last goal, I don't think you can blame him for. And 2 goals you allow, can you not get 3? But the Jets didn't sustain any kind of scoring chances. And we broke it down last night on the post-game show. I thought the fan reaction overall was a little bit of frustration. Understandably so. What's going to be? Because Rick's been breaking it down on his show all year, really, in these 10-game segments. They just keep playing 500. So you want to make the playoffs playing 500? Have fun, because you'll be 20 points out of it. So, I mean, you can put lipstick on a pig all you want. But I just don't think... Yeah, sure, they gave a good team an effort last night. But does this team want to make the playoffs? Because trading for Setoguchi and trading for Frolik indicates to me that they do want to make the playoffs. So you don't get any points last night.
Like you said, moral victories. That's
For who? It's the middle of December, Drew.
I'm not saying that moral victories are good enough by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm saying that's largely what, you know, I think the fans know what this team is. I think the fans know that this team almost has to, you know, is a team that's going to rely on moral victories because they're not going to do it on, in the standings.
This December is an easy schedule, boys. Look at the schedule coming up.
It's not the hardest.
Colorado's not playing well.
Nope.
Dallas isn't anything to write home about. Columbus, Buffalo. You play Buffalo again later on.
New Year's Eve, yeah. You play Florida Panthers.
Play the Panthers.
Yeah.
You play the Oilers, I believe.
Yeah. I think you have the Wild at home.
Five from the Wild and the Canucks. The Canucks, or is it? It's one other team I forget.
It's the Canucks. Either on a road trip. Either right before or right after Christmas.
That's right. Right when they play the Oilers.
Yeah.
And that's back your schedule, guys. I mean, that's not a hard schedule for December. So unless this team makes a run now, good night.
Yeah, Richie, you mentioned discouraging, and to me, it was discouraging and disappointing because in a game like that, where the effort was there, it wasn't in previous games where we've seen a poor start or, yeah, sure, Dustin Byfuglien takes a hooking penalty and you give the second best power play in the NHL an opportunity at the end of the game, they're going to probably take advantage. Mm-hmm. They hadn't taken advantage, right? But the St. Louis Blues, the way they move the puck, there aren't many teams that can move the puck like that. So it is disappointing because you know that you did give up a point. They were a few minutes away from getting a point, and you know, you talk about moral victories, but at this point in the season, they're playing pretty well and they're still coming up short against the Minnesota Wild, their last home game. Again, another game against a team, a very structured team. Mm-hmm. Jacques Lemaire and Ken Hitchcock, Richie. See, the thing to me, the Minnesota Wild and the St. Louis Blues right now, second and third in the division.
Yep.
You're talking about two coaches that have been doing this since the mid-90s. You're talking Ken Hitchcock, late 90s with the Stars, Minnesota Wild, who did that with Lemaire.
Yep. Same style,
and
basically.
And the Jets have had to play that style, so they're keeping games low scoring. But really, guys, you're not getting enough goals from enough players. Brian Little, okay, I'll give him an A+ on the season. Yeah. Brian Little, he took a lot of slack from us included for the way he's played over the last couple of years. Not a number one center in the NHL. Well, the reality is he's producing like a number one center. Yeah. He's top 20 in the league in scoring, but you need goals from other guys. You have to get goals from other guys, because right now the Jets just don't have enough goal scorers.
After Brian Little, the next highest goal scorer for the Jets is Andrew Ladd with 8.
Yeah. Right, Drew, and you've got Evander Kane's out, and it doesn't look like he's going to be back for the next two games at least, based on what Claude Noel said today. Yeah. So, I mean,
He's played 26 games this year. If you told Evander Kane at the beginning of the year that you have 7 goals in 26 games, he would say, I am struggling at putting the puck in the net.
Right.
And you would say, if you tell Andrew Ladd that he's got 8 goals in 32 games, he would say the same thing.
Right.
I just want to be exactly accurate. 8 points out of the fourth place spot in the Central Division with 3 games in hand to Colorado, who they play obviously on Thursday.
Right.
Big 4-point game, as they call it.
Right. So, Richie, Cauley coming up. Yeah. Dallas coming up on mm-hmm. Saturday.
Both teams ahead of them.
I mean, these teams are decent defensively. Kari Lehtinen's a great goalie. Colorado is one of the better defensive teams. You look at their defense and, you know, you don't see Adam Foote or Ray Bork there anymore. Yeah. But they're pretty good defensively. So
68
who's going to step
against,
up?
Yeah.
You need the guy, the Jokinens, the Setoguchis, whether it's a John Albert, whoever. I mean, they're going to have to produce because they're not winning the one-goal games right now at home. And it's Minnesota Wild and last night's game. That's two games in a row where you've put in a good effort and you've come up short because you haven't produced enough offensively. So it's discouraging. The effort was there, and there are things to like. There are good efforts from several players, but at the end of the day, moral victories mean nothing because you're in a position that you've played less games than a lot of teams. The Jets have played a lot more games than a lot of teams in the West. I think there are 32 games now.
32 games.
So you can't leave these games. You can't leave points on the board.
We're almost halfway through the season, guys.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't mean to be critical. I just want to be honest. I mean, you see this team, and look at last night's game. Where was anybody? I mean, the little score they scored in that power play goal. A couple of these guys, though, I mean, come on. The performance. I mean, it was a second line. Was there even a second line last night? I mean, in all honesty. And let's be honest. The first line, you know, Brian Little's been great, okay? Ladd, Wheeler, all that stuff. The Pietrangelo defensive pairing with why am I forgetting?
Bomeister.
Bomeister, excuse me. I mean, they just the way they dealt with that top line made it look easy. They closed gaps because they can both skate. They can both are beautiful skaters, but they both move the puck. So we talked about it on the postgame show last night. You can deal with the forecheck because what St. Louis does is they take away space. So when they take away space, especially the middle, they take away space and they take away the middle. What do? You dump the puck in. The problem is when you dump the puck in against them, especially against that pairing, for example, Bumgarner's in the corner and the puck's out of the zone before you know it. And it's difficult. So they take away space because they can both skate in the neutral zone, and they take away space and they can get back and transition in the defensive zone. The issue is the Jets' first line. Call whatever you will. He's a first liner. He's not a first liner. When you need a big game,
the team that the line that the Jets rely on for the most part for their goal scoring and to be the drivers of this offensive bus, they can be taken away from the game by a number one defensive pairing very easily.
Well, I think so, and I also think that if you're looking at top lines out there, guys, I think we can all agree that last night's best line on the ice was Backes, Oshie, and Steen.
Yeah,
that's one of the better lines in the NHL.
It
right
is.
Now.
To be honest, nobody else on St. Louis for their forward group was that noticeable.
I agree.
So, I mean, you're right. Backes, Oshie, and Steen was the only line that I noticed for the St. Louis Blues.
I mean, the Jets didn't really have anybody else being noticeable aside from their top line.
Right. And we should give credit to the Jets if there are players that aren't noticeable. They did a good job. And I did think Jacob Trouba was excellent again. Yeah. I mean, I really like Jaden Schwartz. Richie and I saw him a couple times play for Colorado College versus UND. And, you know, they don't have you kind of look at their team and you say, okay, well, they don't have a game breaker. We've talked about that before, but Steen's got 22 goals right now, and people are saying, "Oh, it's an aberration." You know, he's gonna slow down a little bit. Maybe so, but if he still gets 40 goals, that's still a pretty darn good season.
And you can say what you will. I mean, he was arguably the best forward on the ice last night. I thought he was involved.
Yep.
And while his goal was fluky, his play was not.
Sure.
And he sustained a lot of pressure, and he can do a lot of things, and he can play in different positions, and he can play the point on the power play, and he can play wing, and he can play center. So when you have that kind of a flexibility, I mean, he's playing for a big contract, and he's going to get a big contract, upwards, I think, of $5 million a year, I bet you he gets. And you know, he's earned it with his play right now. And in terms of, you know, back to St. Louis for a second, they're coming in here. What do they want? They want 2 points. They want to make it really boring.
Mission accomplished.
And that's exactly what they did. And the Jets took him down to the end, guys, and they gave it a shot. But let's quickly talk about the penalty, too. Dustin Buffett, don't get your stick up in the opposing player's stomach around that area, around the midsection. And you could say he pulled in the stick, fine, all you want. But the problem is that Dustin Buffett, who played a lot of minutes last night.
Yeah, 28.
Yeah, a lot, more than anybody else. And he was a little bit tired, I bet. And he got the stick up and they got the penalty. But the Blues, guys, there's unforced errors, too. I mean, you're taking a penalty along the boards. Is it right in front of the net where there's a great scoring chance? No, it's not. Do you have support in the middle? You do. And if you don't, you're like, you should.
Sure.
And St. Louis has a good power play. So taking all those things into account, it's one of those mental errors. How many times have the Jets made stupid decisions like that? You're losing games by sometimes being unfocused.
I wasn't crazy about the call.
No, neither was I, but it was a call.
But you don't put the referee in the position to make the call, especially because the Jets had a number of power plays in a row, and I think the refs were probably looking for an opportunity to probably make a call up for the St. Louis Blues. And if he doesn't put his stick in the guy's midsection, if he keeps his stick low, that call is not made. It's just a play where you're rubbing out the forward along the boards. And you're right in that it's just a... It's a very temporary loss of focus for Dustin Byfuglien. I'm not singling him out because I thought he was noticeable last night where a lot of other guys weren't, for good reasons, I should say. And I'm not singling him out, but it's just the Jets are not good enough to really lose focus against an opponent at any point in time, especially an opponent as good as the St. Louis Blues.
And there were other things, you know, that were issues in the game, and you know they had some of their chances. Ladd on the power play in the first, and Trouba played a nice game, and Ladd had his chances. But you know, you look at the third line, right? And you look at Scheifele, and you look at Hallechuk, two guys I thought were trying to do too much yesterday. I mentioned this again on the postgame show, but they're trying to do too much in that, you know, whether it's a dangle, whether it's overpassing, I believe in the second period, the overpassing that took place, you want to avoid that, but you also want to know who you're playing against. And think about how many times yesterday the Blues take away the middle guys in the neutral zone, in the defensive zone. But think about how many times last night the puck was just put on net and they went to the net. And think about how much traffic was in front of the net. And they need to do a better job of that. And broken record.
Whoa. For how many years have we said the Jets are easy to play against? And I mean, they don't make it difficult on a goaltender or crash them that hard.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I heard you on the post game yesterday. I think I heard you use Chris Thorburn as an example. Mm-hmm. He took a shot and he just went. It was a simple shot, but he went in after it hard.
Well, no, and as he likes Chris Thorburn. And the point was, Chris Thorburn comes down the right wing, and I think it's the first period. I don't remember what period it was. Comes down the right wing, fires a shot on net, low to the left side, to the goalie's right side, to his left side. It was a shot that had a purpose of generating a rebound, which it did, and almost created a goal and possible scoring chance. But it's a simple play that leads to a possible chance. And Chris Thorburn is not talented enough to play in the second line. But the idea that kind of a play, guys, the simple play that leads to creating scoring opportunities, is not utilized enough.
It's a team with problems. I don't think we're.
But you know, Drew, quickly on that.
Revelations there.
Quickly on that too. Is the question is, you know, what? How does it change? And Rick asked that last night, and I don't know if I have the answer. I don't have the answer. How does it change?
It's something we've talked about on this show and on Saturday's show for a while now, and only time will tell when the change happens. But I think most fans, even the most diehard of fans, are probably coming to the point in time where they want to see. A different team than what they're seeing night in and night out. Let's go to break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about the Pittsburgh-Boston free-for-all that was Saturday night in the NHL. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Minutes past 6 o'clock. Welcome back to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
They play the song when the visiting team scores.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing the song is missing right now is the sound of Jay Richardson being very depressed and announcing a goal right now. Because nobody does it better than Jay when it comes to negatively announcing a
when the Jets score, you want to be super excited.
Yeah.
And then when the other team scores, you know everybody's depressed and everybody's just looking down. But, you know, sometimes Jay, you know, he goes a little too far. You don't want to go all the way sometimes. But.
Yeah. Saturday night, Pittsburgh-Boston. We've all seen the highlights.
Sunday night?
No, Saturday night.
That was Saturday night. Yeah,
that was Saturday night.
Long
sorry,
weekend for you guys.
Yeah. You had a rough Saturday night, or was it the rough Friday night that got to you?
Richie, I was with you Saturday night, right?
No.
You had a party. I was at the chill. No. Yeah, it was a late night. It was a long day because we were up early for the show. And
you still have you gone to sleep since that day?
Yeah, I've been sleeping. A little sleeping pills.
Anyways, Saturday night between Pittsburgh and Boston, all hell broke loose, of course. Brooks Orpik, he hits Louis Erickson, concusses him. James Neal knees Brad Marchand in the head while Marchand is down on the ice. Orpik refuses to fight Thornton. Thornton subsequently slew-foots him and punches him into unconsciousness. And then Chris Kelly, something that nobody knew in the course of the game, suffers a fractured fibula after being slashed by Pascal Dupuis. Let me ask you guys this question.
Old-time hockey.
Of all the actions you saw on Saturday night, which one was the most egregious?
Ooh, egregious. Big word. Someone worked in Ottawa. That's a tough one. I mean...
I assume it's between Neal and Orpik for you.
Thornton. Richie, you're probably going to see Sean Thornton get, what, minimum 10 games?
Never been suspended before. Plays a hard game, made a stupid decision. I think it'll likely be about 10 games, Ezzy, but I said yesterday that...
Was worse.
If you were to switch Neal and Thornton's names on the back of the jerseys in the same acts, I bet you they'd switch the suspensions.
So, Richie, James Neal has the suspension history. He has a suspension history. Okay, fine. That factors in, right? But Sean Thornton's actions, in my opinion, were due to his frustration... that Orpik wouldn't fight him. And I know a lot of people are saying, okay, well, that doesn't make what he did better, but I think this is a similar situation to Matt Cook and Todd Bertuzzi. Now, before everybody
Steve
gets...
Moore.
Pardon me, Steve Moore. Before everybody... I've been drinking Red Bull, so I'm a little bit excited. I'm missing names and dates and everything. before everybody gets, you know, super excited here, I'm not saying that what happened was as bad as Steve Moore and Todd Bertuzzi. What I'm saying was it was similar. If you guys remember, this is a while ago, Todd Bertuzzi chases Steve Moore around the ice. It isn't...
Steve Moore had already fought in that game to supposedly, you know, account for his hit on...
Todd Bertuzzi wanted to fight him, though.
Well, but Steve Moore only has to answer the bell one if you're going to go by the code.
You could say he has to, whatever. I'm just saying this is what happened. I mean, it's clear. Todd Bertuzzi was trying to fight him. He wouldn't fight him. And he punched him in the back of the head. And so I think the two situations are analogous. You look at Sean Thornton. He wants to fight Orpik. Now, Richie, we were talking about this yesterday when we were watching hockey, or two nights ago. And you can say, oh, well, you know, Brooks Orpik doesn't want to fight Sean Thornton. He's a heavyweight. Of course Sean Thornton's a heavyweight. But in a situation like that, where Orpik nails Erickson, that is when... That's basically... you know, an organic reason to have a fight, if you want to look at it. I mean, it's not just a fight for the sake of fighting, right?
Yep.
Thornton's saying, okay, you just knocked out Erickson, let's fight. Now, again, this isn't, you know, my opportunity to start promoting fighting or anything like that. I'm just saying that I think that was not as bad. Now, Sean Thornton punches a guy who's on the ice defenseless. That's bad. And that's probably why he's going to get 10, 12 games, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But James Neal, I mean, what's he doing? Brad Marchand's on the ice, and he knees him in the head. To me, that was worse. That's my opinion.
It's a good question, Drew, and I'm with Izzy in that the knee to the head was worse for me. Because, you know the concussion problems, you know about the issues with head injuries now, and you intentionally knee him while he's on the ground, going pretty much full speed. And it's obvious that you're doing it. And I realize that Brad Marchand is a pain to play against and he's annoying and all that stuff. But that was blatant. To me, Thornton was worked up earlier, the fact that Orpik wouldn't fight him, grabbed him. If you watch it, I mean, it's terrible what happened. And it's terrible what he did. But if you watch it, I mean, Brooks Orpik is a big, tough guy. And he grabs him and then he punches him. Orpik just didn't defend himself at all, really, because he didn't see him coming, probably going to get pulled down. Mm-hmm. I understand that. But I thought Niels was terrible. I thought they were both bad. But I don't think Sean Thornton is a dirty player. Now he's a dirty player because of what he did. You know, I think he's a tough guy.
Is James Neal a dirtier player?
I don't think James Neal is just a dirty player now because of, you know, because of this incident.
Well, given his history, though.
Yeah, fair enough. And maybe he is a little bit more dirty than Thornton, a little bit less of the honest, you know, tough player. Fair enough. Because Neal is a bigger guy. But even Orpik's, this is a thing that I don't understand. I don't like when teams fight after a clean hit, but you can argue that Orpik said it wasn't clean.
It was really bang-bang.
It was close. Let me ask you this, though, because then you get onto another theory. The other theory is you hit to separate the player from the puck. Did Brooks Orpik ever, at any point in time, look at the puck in that play?
No.
Did he was going to run him no matter what. He saw his head down, he was going to run him.
That's
so what
true.
About that? So if you're going to run the guy and not play any regard to the puck at all, you could, subjective whether or not you think that's within the rules or not, You're not going to answer the bell for it? I thought it was an iffy hit. Does he have to fight? So then bear hug him. And grab him and just stand there. I don't know. I think the certain self-policing, I think, still has a place. But everybody and their brothers now are calling for none of this stuff to happen. So, like, Orpik, does Orpik not fighting cause everything? I saw Elliot Freeman's column, I guess it came out today or yesterday now, about, well, where does it stop with all that stuff? Okay, where does it stop? But if you're playing and you're Sean Thornton, and these guys are brothers to you, and one of your guys got concussed after he was concussed earlier in the season, he's a new guy on the team, you want to show that the team is just as tight as the team that went to the Cup final last year and won the Cup a couple years ago.
Brothers in arms.
Yeah, and you want to stick up for him. You're frustrated, you're angry, you're emotional.
And then you lose another one of your players, or another one of your guys gets nailed with a knee to the head. I mean, you got to remember, the sequence of events here, I think, does matter in that...
100%, I think it matters.
Orpik hits Erickson. Whether or not it's a clean hit or not is debatable, but Orpik hits Erickson, Neal hits Marchand, and then the third action... Thornton wanted to fight Orpik, and Orpik wouldn't go. And then the third and final action in the course of the game is Thornton knocking out Orpik.
I like this. It's like L.A. Law, and Drew's like dissecting the sequence of events. No, but I'm all joking aside. You're right, and you talk about the sequence of events, and what about the fact that the players involved, You could say Sean Thornton's a fourth-line grinder enforcer. He's one of the best fourth-line guys.
Yes.
Most teams will take a guy like Sean Thornton because he can score.
The Jets would love a guy like Sean Thornton.
So look at the guys. James Neal, Brad Marchand, Louis Erickson. These are the skill players. Uh-huh. These are guys that could go to the Olympics.
Let me ask you
guys. And the point being, Drew, that you know, this is an important decision. And I think Shanahan's doing a great job. And I think you know we're going to get to the article that was written in the Boston Globe about you know the Department of Player Safety and what goes on there. But you look at what he's only allowed to suspend guys, Richie. He can only do so much. He can't suspend the guy for 50 games, yeah. Right? So, I mean, I think you could make the argument Neal should be suspended for 25 games or Phaneuf should be suspended for 10 games, whatever. He can only do so much. The point being that these are skilled players. These are two teams. This might be your Eastern Conference finals now.
That's a bitter rivalry.
But what about the fact that, I mean, you can look at so many different angles. What about the fact that Orpik doesn't fight, mm-hmm. and so Thornton doesn't have the opportunity to fight him?
Well,
and so what happens is he takes matters into his own hands, grabs him, punches him, and he's going to do what he's going to do anyways. The idea being that you consent, you fight, get it over with, as opposed to you don't fight and he's going to get back at him anyways. Because this is always a concern, right? I understand the argument against fighting. I've heard all of it. I understand it. But the idea is these guys will do whatever they have to do to stick up for teammates. So if you're not going to have fighting, then the guy's going to go and he's going to two-hand the guy in the leg. He's going to cross-check him in the face. He's going to do what he's going to do.
Yeah, and Richie, it's not the most rational thing. Because if it wasn't...
But you play hockey. You play... Yeah. Like, it's fine.
Not very well.
It's fine for us to sit back, think, you know, oh, this and that. But when you're in the middle of the game, have you played hockey before? You get emotional on a shift, especially when there's 20,000 people yelling and screaming. You got your whole teammates ready to go. You're playing an emotional game. Like, that has to be taken into account, too. And I'm not defending these guys' actions. I mean, you need to have dirt. I hate hitting from behind. I hate the elbow that Jared Cowan laid.
Yep.
Certain stuff that I can't stand. This stuff to me, and I don't like the knee. There's certain stuff to me, though, that sometimes just happens. It's unfortunate. It should be dealt with accordingly, but we don't need to have a summit over it every time.
Let me ask you guys two questions. One, let's pretend that Orpik isn't stretchered off, and you know, and Thornton does exactly what he does.
Nobody talks about it.
Nobody. And
it didn't look on the video. It didn't look as bad as you think.
No, on the video, I was at the MTS Center, so I brought it up on my BlackBerry to watch it. And I'm looking at myself. I'm like, that knocked him out.
I know.
I was surprised that knocked him out, to be honest. And if he doesn't,
I'm surprised you got video on your BlackBerry.
That's a separate issue altogether. If he doesn't knock him out, there, is it even a suspension in your mind?
No, I don't even think they talk about it.
Well,
second question.
Tough to say.
I just think it's like a grab him.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, second question I have. Why doesn't James Neal have to answer the bell?
For that?
Why doesn't he have to answer the bell for his hit on Marchand?
He may have to answer the bell.
You're telling me,
Richie, when these guys are meet next, I'm not sure. Maybe we can pull it up.
I'll see when they play next.
But
they're going to have Shanahan in that locker room, though. You got to watch it.
Right. They're going to be warned to be careful here. But you're telling me that Brad Marchand's a guy that's been suspended, Richie. He's had to change his game a little bit because he's a guy. We can argue about this, but I mean, I picked him to be on the Canadian Olympic team. I love Marchand. You know, a lot of people hate him because he's a pest, but a pest is valuable on a hockey team. But he's had to change his game. You're telling me Brad Marchand, when he's playing against the Pittsburgh Penguins, he's not going to be looking for James Neal on the ice? I mean, so again, they'll have to be careful, but you do have to answer. The thing with hockey is you have to answer for your actions on the ice. It's not, you don't deal with things off the ice and all that, and I'm not saying that other sports don't, but that's just the way hockey is. If you're going to run around, I mean, we were talking about that last week, the whole Sean Avery thing where he was mouthing off to guys. And, you know, the veterans will tell you, you know, watch yourself because you can't just mouth off. In the NHL and in hockey in general, you can't just run around the ice slashing people, kneeing people, and not have to pay for it. I mean, that's just the way hockey is. It's always been like that.
What happens in baseball? Remus likes baseball. What happens in baseball? You throw at a guy in the other team. You hit him.
Yeah.
You're going to get hit back.
Yeah.
So you just take it and you go. Or you avoid it, and then and crazy stuff happens. I mean, it's not like hockey; it's only sport hockey. 100-mile-an-hour fastball at my ribs doesn't sound so appealing.
It sounds like it would hurt. Let's go to break. Before we do, the next time the Bruins and the Penguins would meet would be in the Eastern Conference Finals, barring a crossover.
They're not playing an outdoor game.
They're not playing an outdoor. I think they may have scheduled one in
the
33 minutes
we've
been on
four times
air.
This year, right?
I can't tell you how many tickets. How many times? Oh,
sorry,
tickets
yeah,
to
three
the,
times.
To
three
the,
times, yeah.
How many times have been offered tickets to the Leafs Red Wings game? It's like, you think I want to go to Detroit?
Hold on, can we get Remus on here? Remus on here really quickly. How are they going to take out home plate collisions out of baseball, Reem. I don't get this.
How do you turn a mic on, Reem?
I think it's a good move. I think you have to do it. You want me to get into it next segment?
Yeah, let's do it. Home plate collisions.
What?
Yeah, the illegal
what?
Curve
so
baseball
illegal
show.
Curveball.
Let's go. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Get on top! Get on top!
20 minutes before 7 o'clock here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. No, it's not. It's NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I'm telling you. Between the two of you.
It's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of different titles to this show. We should just name it the same thing so I get myself confused.
At least it's not the Don Vito Collision and Glass pregame power panel.
Well, it's the pregame power hour and the pregame power panel. If I was Rick, I mean, my head would explode off
Rick
my shoulders.
Every time. You can't even get a legal curve out.
I can't, it's true. I keep hoping for a different name and it just never changes.
You Amos, you look like you want to get in on this.
We talk about Rick. My mentor.
Oh, your mentor.
Slick Rick.
So it is like, what, you know, what do you guys talk about? He's your mentor, obviously. You ask him life questions. Like, what have you been talking about lately?
Oh, I don't know. He's got just a lot of experience in radio, and it's great to bounce ideas off him. Because, you know me, I have no experience.
And what ideas are you having that just aren't rejected immediately out of hand?
Oh, God. That's a
tell you what, Remus, while you're on air, why don't we discuss your Rob Gronkowski theory from Sunday? Because, you know, you fancy yourself a football analyst.
No, I don't.
You had better tweets,
Remus. Really tired, okay?
Yeah, well.
I hadn't seen the hit. I didn't know how he got injured.
If you're really tired, here's a good rule of thumb. Don't tweet, because that was one of the worst tweets I've seen in a long time.
Tell people what the tweet was,
Drew. I'm pulling it up right here.
It wasn't that bad.
I was watching football with my brother. My brother said, wow, Remus has to stop tweeting about football.
Can we talk about the baseball collisions?
No, nobody cares about that.
I care.
Yeah, well,
Libel cares.
Yeah, well, you guys can call each other on the phone and have a talk.
We already texted about it. We're texting with the Mariners today.
Reem, we need to know your thoughts on the Robinson Cano signing.
I think they paid way too much money, and they're a desperate team that has terrible management.
Ooh. Tell us how you really feel, Michael.
That's true, though. You said
terrible management. Maybe they want you to run their Twitter feed.
Oh, my God.
Okay, Reem, home plate collisions. You're a guy that goes home almost every night. So let's
do you ever have collisions with your plate at home, like for a pizza? Like what happens?
Yeah. I just think it's the catcher is completely defenseless. I mean, this is almost they're getting to jackass territory with a guy standing
still. I'm pretty sure right now we're in jackass territory.
There's a guy standing still at the plate, and then a guy from third. You know, he's over 200 pounds running full speed into him. It's ridiculous.
At M. Remus.
Guys are getting hurt.
At M. Remus 3 days ago on Twitter, Gronkowski has proven to be way too fragile. To be an everyday NFLer.
Wow.
The Patriots should use him in a limited role as a quote-unquote secret weapon / pinch hitter.
What does secret weapon mean? Like carry him in a bag and then
look,
drop
I
him
don't...
out and he runs off to the end zone?
Yeah, it means when they get in the red zone, just bring him in. He's a huge guy. He's a target. First of all, fragile. I tell you, he does get injured a lot, but I hadn't seen the injury. Obviously, no one is going to survive that.
That tweet led to me to respond with, that kind of analysis is why you're behind the board and not in front of the microphone.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I can't. It was a bad tweet. They can't all be winners.
Reem, I'm going to bail you out once again here. That wasn't that bad of a tweet. You know what? Remus is awesome. Follow him at M. Remus. He's a funny guy. He's basically the face and the voice of the station right now. Let's be honest.
I'm trying to
pump you up here,
and I
Reem.
Told you not to.
Okay, right, fine. You know what? Okay, I know that you get nervous. So,
NHL
anyways,
Board of Governors
Remus.
Meeting. They wrapped up in.
They might as well never.
In Palm Springs, wherever it was. It was in California.
Pebble Beach.
You were there, Justin. Pebble Beach. Did you stay at that resort?
No, I didn't. But it looked like Gary was having a nice time in the wind there on the golf course.
Mm-hmm. Richie was on Rodeo most of his time.
Yeah,
there.
That's true enough. Salary cap will rise to $71.1 million next season.
Yeah.
And I hear a lot of people saying, well, you know, why did we have a lockout if it's going to be up that high that quickly? And the simple math is, it would be a lot higher if it wasn't for the lockout.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we all know why the lockout happened.
Let's get it down to 50-50.
Do we even have to go into that? The reality is, Richie, and you know, I don't have my scientific calculator here, so my numbers might be a little off here. But The reality is this television deal worth $5.2 billion over 12 years is fantastic, and it means that teams, you know, specifically in the Sun Belt, mm-hmm. that don't get as much ticket revenue as the Canadian teams and as the Eastern American teams, it means that they're gonna get more revenue sharing, right?
Well,
so this is positive.
Getting into all the nitty gritty details, a team like the floor for next year, the salary floor is estimated to be about $52 million. You take a team like the Carolina Hurricanes that qualify for a full share of revenue sharing in the NHL, and they're going to get, it's estimated, around $45 million right. in revenue sharing before they even sell one ticket next year, between the TV deal, between escrow, and between you know, revenue sharing itself. They're going to get $45 million, so they're going to get, you know, at least, you know, probably 2/3 to 3/4 of their team's salary paid without factoring in local television, without factoring in putting anybody in the seats. For a team like the Carolina Hurricanes, it's an absolute windfall of money right now, and that's why these teams are you know, people want to own these teams. This TV deal really made the NHL, believe it or not, a valuable property to own.
Right, Richie, and it's good for hockey fans, and it's good for hockey fans specifically in the U.S. The mm-hmm. Canadian teams are solid. Since the Winnipeg Jets have been back 2 years, what, they've doubled their value? I mean, mm-hmm. and sure, the Ottawa Senators have their problems, but I'm sure they'll be fine. Ottawa's a solid hockey market. I don't have any concerns that the Ottawa Senators are all of a sudden going to have to relocate. But as far as those American teams, as we've talked about, the Florida Panthers, the Phoenix Coyotes, the teams that have struggled to get fans in the seats, it's really good. And right now, the way things are going, Gary Bettman's got the American TV deal. He can check that off. The Canadian TV deal, he can check that off. Does hockey have problems? Sure. But as far as money coming in and the ownership situation, it's a lot better than it was 2 or 3 years ago. And I think that's good.
I'm not quite sure why they had the meeting. I mean, they could have just voted by email and not golfed. But
yeah, it's very true. It's a good question as to why they bothered to meet in the first place, yeah. besides getting away for a few days. Yeah.
Bettman could have just done like a little FaceTime with Bill Daly and all the owners.
Just Skype everybody in. It would have been nice, you know, sort of, you know, communal sort of way to go about it. Another topic out of the Board of Governors meetings was expansion. I mean, in the NHL, generally speaking, if you don't hear it talked about, it means it's not on the forefront.
Right.
But when you hear them talk about expansion as much as they did this last couple days, and you have Bettman pretty much addressing it in vivid detail, to me, that means that we're going to see two more expansion teams within the next 5 to 7 years.
Yeah, I would agree. The interpretation, many people interpreted it as, you know, let's hear your best offer, whether it be Toronto, whether it be Quebec City, whether it be anywhere else, one American, one Canadian. It's a cash grab. There's not enough talent out there. I mean, you watch some of these teams play Calgary. I mean, look at the rosters, the depth rosters on the Jets. I mean, a bunch of these guys, you're not seeing high enough quality talent. And so to put teams in markets and charging $500, $600, $700, you know, billion, whatever it may be, to buy into this club, you know, it's just a bottom line thing. I mean, how many teams are there in the NBA? There's gonna be less teams in the NBA than there are in the NHL.
Well, there's gonna be, I mean, this would make it 32, so you'd have exactly what the, you'd have four divisions of 8 teams. So
you have,
I mean,
more teams in baseball and in basketball.
Yeah.
You have 30 in both of those. You have 32 in the NFL, and you have 30 in hockey. And I realize Canada is a bigger market. They have more, obviously, traction in Canada than they do than the other sports. Having said all of that, is it really necessary?
No.
I mean, is it really necessary to do that? Can you focus on keeping the game strong right now? And I know you have the huge TV deal and all that, but I think for the paying fans, there's just not enough talent right now. There's not enough talent to have 32 teams. I mean, how many of these games? Let's go over the rosters. And look at the NFL, for example, the quarterback, the lack of good quarterbacks. I mean, there's some great ones, but there's some bad ones. Look at, you have Nashville, you have Calgary, as I mentioned. You have the fourth and third line of most teams.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, you have teams. If you look at Tampa, for example, you know, Stamkos, those guys are good, but a lot of the guys on that team, you know, virtually unknown. Carolina, their depth lines. Are you really going to bring in two more teams and create 60 more jobs?
Look at the number of teams at the end of the year whose highest point getter is maybe 50 points, 55 points. That would be, I mean, I know, you know, hearkening back to the late 80s, that would have been a fourth line player.
But I realize things have changed. I realize people are playing, you know. But I also believe that a lot of the, you know, it's a very expensive game now, and you're getting a lot of top-heavy action. You're having less people actually playing the game for an extended period of time because of how expensive it is. And I just don't think it's necessary. Let's see how it works in Phoenix with the new ownership. Let's see how that goes. And let's see if it's a success. And if it is, then great. Then maybe look at it later on. I just think... The league right now has it going well, right, guys? They got their TV deals, as he mentioned. They got both TV deals. They got new ownership in Florida, new ownership in New Jersey, new ownership in Phoenix. Things are looking on the up and up. Can we keep it a little bit smooth for a little bit before trying to rock the boat again?
I think it will be smooth for a while. Drew mentions 5 or 7 years. I don't think you're going to see a team in Seattle, Quebec City, Markham, Las Vegas, or whatever.
Chattanooga.
Whatever city you want to mention for at least, I would say probably even 4 years. But so you're talking 5 to 7 years. No, I understand that you're currently in only the second year of the new CBA, right? So I agree with you. There are a lot of questions to be answered, and I realize that every time there are general managers meetings and board of governors meetings, the issue of expansion comes up and what's going on, and Gary Bettman basically says nothing, and then everyone spins it into, oh, well, he's saying that they're listening to calls.
Well, I mean, that's past precedent, though. But
he said it.
But what about this? What about, you mentioned the CBA is in year two. What about in year 5 or 6, well, if the loonie goes down to 88 cents, as some are projecting, and there's not as much revenue, or if the revenues shoot up, and the high-end teams are easily paying to the top of the cap, mm-hmm. and the other teams, revenue sharing aside, are losing a lot of money because the bottom of the cap is just too high for them.
Sure.
We don't know yet. I mean, there are people who are smarter, who are a hell of a lot smarter than that, projecting these things, but who knows? So why jump in before you really see what you got?
Makes good sense. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to shift our attention to a question involving Team Canada and the Olympics. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Wednesday evening, TSN 1290 online at TSN1290.ca. This is NHL Midweek. Richard Pollock on my far left, Ezra Ginsberg in the middle. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you back to this fine program. Gentlemen, obviously we know that the Olympics are rapidly approaching, probably about 2 months away, give or take, right about now. I'm not exactly sure when the first puck drop is, but it's right around the mm-hmm. middle of February, so it's certainly within striking distance, maybe 60, 70 days away from now. We wanted to ask this question about the Olympic roster compilation, and I'll turn it over to you guys, too, because I know you guys want to get in on this. Should talent rule the day? As in, Team Canada picks the most talented forwards? Or how much consideration should be given to the concept of guys who can play well together and maybe duos ruling the roster as opposed to it being a straight talent competition? Richie, I'll start with you on this one.
Tough, Drew. But I think talent has to win out. And I kind of related back to what happened in 2010 with Brent Seabrook. And Brent Seabrook and Duncan Keith play together quite often. Chicago, they break them up once in a while. They play together quite often. But Brent Seabrook, and I have a ton of respect for him, and I think he's a great defenseman. He's an all-star defenseman as far as I'm concerned. Can play on my team any day of the week. But he had a problem adjusting to the speed of the game in 2010. And Duncan Keith, with him or without him, he had an issue with that. And I thought that Team Canada kind of recognized that and kind of moved him out and didn't play him much because of that flaw in his game. And that's probably the only flaw in his game. He really is a well-rounded player. So the idea is, you know, as much as they have a chemistry, look what happened to Duncan Keith playing with Drew Doughty. Look what happens with certain players develop chemistry. And sometimes it can happen like this, and sometimes it doesn't. But I realize there's a risk in not developing, but talent has a way of working with it's, you know, we're working with other talent, especially when you have a round robin that is very, it's not meaningless, but it doesn't mean as much as maybe it would in some other, well, you know, some other formats.
You
have time to work towards, you know, getting ready to play in the elimination games. If I look at it in terms of a Chris Kunitz,
because that's really the big question. Is
well, it's St. Louis and Stamkos too.
Yeah,
it's Getzlaff and Perry.
There's a lot of combinations.
Well, I know, I mean, you could make an argument that, you know, Perry and Getzlaff can easily make this team individually. Kunitz would, I mean, if he wasn't playing with Crosby, would never really be in this conversation.
Yes, I agree with that.
Okay.
Now, if Crosby's not easy to play with, though, as good as he is and as great of a passer is, he's not always the easiest guy to play with. So Kunitz playing with him is obviously a great benefit. But at the same time, would you put him on your team? And I wouldn't put him on my team over Jamie Benn, who can skate, hit, shoot, hand. I mean, he's got an all-around talent. I know he's meshed well with Tyler Seguin. We can talk about that a little bit later. That's a good combo, too. People don't really talk about.
You'll see him on Saturday.
Yeah, but and you've seen him here before, right? He dominated when he played here the first time. But when you look at, you know, Jamie Benn, is Jamie Benn on your team over Chris Kunitz? To me, he is, even with Kunitz's chemistry. And I realize what you're saying, Drew, in terms of it has to be at a certain level to be in the conversation. And Kunitz is a very good player. Don't get me wrong. But I still think that you take the more talented players. And I realize you want guys for certain roles. But to me, the guys who fill the certain roles are Taves, Bergeron, Mike Richards, who can kill penalties, win draws, do anything you need them to do. Those are the two-way players. You know, like
Patrick Sharp.
Even Patrick Sharp, although I don't have him on my team right now. We'll do our teams in the next few weeks.
No, I'm not saying necessarily. I'm just saying.
Same idea.
All right.
So that's the kind of guy. It's not a guy who can play with Crosby and Ghost. I mean, they have a lot of guys who can do what Chris Kunitz does. And no disrespect to him. While Crosby can be difficult to play with at times and didn't really develop a chemistry with Rick Nash, Jerome Iginla, Eric Staal in the last tournament.
Yeah. Wasn't great in Vancouver.
Right. There are still guys that he can develop chemistry with. I'm confident of that.
Such a fun conversation to have as far as the Canadian Olympic team goes and how you construct it, because we all have these conversations. Everybody that's listening has these conversations with their friends, with their family, who should make the team. There's no wrong answers, right? So you're talking about Jamie Benn. Jamie Benn has been sensational.
Rob Zamner is the wrong answer.
Right. Rob Zamner might be the wrong answer, right? And not picking Wayne Gretzky in the shootout is also a wrong answer. No offense, Mark Crawford. But you talk about, you know, Drew right off the bat talked about Chris Kunitz and Sidney Crosby. And Richie, you said, okay, well, do you not put Jamie Benn on the team? But if you think about it, the way an Olympic team is constructed is not the way you're constructing any other team, right? Because at the end of the day, you're trying to find, especially for the forward combinations, you're trying to find the different combinations that work as far as scoring goes. You talk about the roles. Mike Richards, Patrice Bergeron, and Brad Marchand are first-line players. In the Olympics, they're on the fourth line, right? Mm-hmm. So those guys can score, but if Patrice Bergeron has to shut down Ovechkin, right? Because he's a shutdown forward, right? So if he has to shut down Kovalchuk or Nikushkin, if he makes, you know what I mean? So those are the types of decisions, but I think this is a fascinating debate because Kunitz might make the team. I would say at this point he's a bit of an outsider, but if you think about it, Stevie Eiserman, Ken Holland, Peter Chiarelli, all these guys that are having these conversations, I bet one of them is saying, okay, but if we bring Kunitz to Sochi, he's going to have that comfort level with Crosby. We can pencil him on the top line, and we know that Crosby is going to be comfortable, and he's going to know, they know where each other are on the ice, but you have another guy that says, okay, but Jamie Benn, I mean, he's a guy he's a good skater, and he's got the reach, and he's a pure sniper. Let's give him the spot. So I think either way, you can argue for certain guys. Same thing with St. Louis. I think St. Louis deserves to be there. A lot of people don't have him there, but you consider the veteran leadership. The guy has unbelievable hands.
Chemistry with Stamkos.
And then you throw in the chemistry with Stamkos,
but,
Richie.
But he's at a level that's higher than Kunitz, so it's easier to put him on the team.
Right. Right.
That's just so it. St. Louis.
So what can he do on his own? If that line's not going in the Olympics,
right?
If they need to break it up, where are you putting Kunitz? He wouldn't be on your team.
Right.
So to me, if you have to shuffle the lines because it ain't working, you can't leave a guy there just because he's comfortable.
Or if whatever Team USA or whatever team with an exceptional defense says, we're not going to let Sidney Crosby beat us, that team would be much happier having Chris Kunitz on the line than seeing Jamie Benn or a lot of
these
other guys.
And no disrespect to Kunitz, man. He goes to the net, he has a lot of good things, but he's just not the same talent level as those guys.
At the end of the day, Drew, you're not constructing a team for an 82-game season, right?
That's right.
It's a, what is it, 7 or 8-game tournament, right? So you're constructing the team to win a short little tournament. So that's why these decisions are going to be so fun to watch, because there aren't really easy. Crosby will be there, Taves will be there, Tavares will be there. We know there's certain locks on the team, but then when you're talking about those certain wingers that are on the bubble, there are so many.
From now until January 7th, when they announce the team, that's what we'll be talking about pretty much nonstop. You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Let's go to break.
You've been listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. This is The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
One hour to go here on TSN 1290. This is NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Producer Remus is on loan to us from Rick Ralph and the Ronan Roundtable. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, Drew Mindell here in studio.
Hold on.
Yeah, as you go for it.
What about a shout out to our new intern, Jesse Pollock?
Absolutely. Jesse Pollock, going to be our intern
Richie and I are both related to you.
That's true.
Because my grandmother was a Pollock.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was a mudda. And Jesse's joining us, and he's loving everything. He's liking the passion.
Yeah, he hasn't run away screaming after an hour, so that's always a good sign. Yeah, so intern Jesse's going to be with us for the next month or so.
Jesse
the intern. Yes. Okay, sorry, I didn't get the pre-show memo.
Yeah.
Jesse the intern's going to be with us for the next month or so. Jesse, is that right? Okay. Anyways, welcome Jesse the intern to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Of course, over the next month, you'll see some of his work here on the show, and of course on illegalcurve.com as well. Gentlemen, Wayne Gretzky. You know, it was probably about a year ago at this time where we heard the concept and the idea of make whole. The NHL had to make whole when it came to the labor negotiations, and they finally made whole Wayne Gretzky, and they fixed the $7 to $8 million that he was owed by former Coyotes owner Jerry Moyes. Now, there's certainly a question that can be asked why it took the NHL, 3 years to pay Wayne Gretzky, only their greatest ambassador in the history of the game. But obviously we'll leave that for another day and time. But there's rumblings that now that Wayne has been, has settled his issues with the NHL, he'd be interested in getting back into an NHL front office, or at least taking a little bit of a more active role with an NHL organization. We saw him in Washington a couple weeks ago sitting with Capitals owner Ted Leonsis. There's talk about, of course, Toronto, given the ties there, LA. There's even talk about Phoenix.
Edmonton, too.
Edmonton,
Phoenix.
Sure.
He's going to go back to Phoenix?
Somebody mentioned Phoenix. I didn't quite understand that one, but you never know.
That's definitely not happening.
Well, it's close to home at the very least.
I think it's great that he's finally receiving the money that's due to him. Richie, I was under the impression that they had to figure out the whole ownership situation and all that before, but it's still a travesty. It was a joke when you treat a guy like that. Mm-hmm. Wayne Gretzky, the best hockey player of all time, hands down. I talking about where he could end up, we asked Al Strachan, who has the Gretzky book out.
Mm-hmm.
We asked Al Strachan about it. Everybody knows Gretzky's in California, and to me, Rob Blake's there. It makes sense if he has some type of role with the LA Kings, because his entire family's there, his kids are there. Toronto, sure, he's from Ontario. A guy like him, he has his corporate commitments, and he even said that when he was interviewed that the only reason why he was in Washington was because of those corporate commitments, right? But sure, you never know what's going on.
Right? I
mean, he's not going to Washington, but he also wasn't. There's no connection there as far as a job, right?
To me, I understand the LA thing. They have so much in the way of man. They lost Ron Hextall, but they have a lot of bright people there. And Dean Lombardi is one of the best general managers in the National Hockey League. I think he'd certainly be a great addition to that front office. I think it makes a lot of sense for him to be involved in the Edmonton management.
Well, he's got his boys Kevin Lowe and Craig McTavish are already there.
Yeah, Messier.
Messier, sure. I mean, after Messier left the Rangers sort of in a messier situation than you'd expect this offseason.
No
pun intended, exactly. So,
But let's get to the Edmonton thing for a second. They have a core. We know they have a core. They've had trouble building around it. He is the most beloved. There's no city that he's loved in more than in Edmonton or maybe Brantford, those two places in Toronto. So,
hold on, Richie. Are you saying that Gretzky should come back on the ice and play for the Oilers?
I mean, he could. They could use a bigger center, and he is bigger than Nugent Hopkins. But when you think about it, though, guys, his ability to identify talent, and I think it's in a management role. It's not in a coaching role.
No.
To help that team. He doesn't have to live in Edmonton, which I don't think he probably wants to move his whole family. He still has, I believe he has two kids at home still, or one kid at home. But in any event, I think Edmonton being able to fly, it's relatively close, come in once in a while. They're in the West. They're coming through California. They go to San Jose, Anaheim, Phoenix, and L.A. He can meet them there. He can watch play. We can watch. I think there, as an advisor in some role, would make a lot of sense.
I think just the thought process, just the idea that at any given time,
yeah,
Wayne Gretzky could walk through the dressing room, even if he only does it five times a year. Just the idea that Wayne Gretzky could walk through the dressing room and you have to be accountable to him will, I mean, for a team like Edmonton that needs guidance and needs leadership.
But, Drew, I don't see it that way. I don't see it as him walking through the room and saying hello. I see it as him identifying what is needed, who could help, and how they could help.
So you don't think it's in a ceremonial sort of role?
No.
You think he's there as really the guy who drives the ship?
In part. I don't think Gretz wants to do the ceremonial stuff once in a while. Maybe he does it just out of courtesy. But if he's going to be involved, this guy knows too much about hockey to be shaking hands and kissing babies.
Richie, isn't that similar to, I mean, not similar to what he might be considering, but Mark Messier's role with Glenn Sather?
Yeah.
Was a special advisor to Glenn Sather.
And then
Messier wanted to become a coach, right? We all know that. And then...
Absolutely.
Right,
so falling out.
I agree with Richie. I don't think that Gretzky wants to kiss babies, shake hands, improve business. I think Wayne Gretzky is perfectly comfortable right now with what he's doing, and I think he's going to make a decision. He's going to take a long time to make his decision, because if he decides to work with the Edmonton Oilers, the LA Kings, New York Rangers, I don't think he's going to just say, okay, I'm going to try this out for a year, because Phoenix was a disaster.
Well, it's not going to go back there. I mean,
no, I'm just saying that experience, Richie. He's not a guy that's just going to say, okay, I'm going to see if this is going to work out in Edmonton,
right,
and if it does, I'll stay there for a couple of years. No, if they're bringing Gretzky in, they're bringing Gretzky in for a significant period of time. Edmonton, you're right; it hasn't been mentioned that much, and I think you have something there. They've got a new arena coming up, the 500th arena called Rogers Palladium or whatever
place,
it's called now. And there's obvious reasons why Gretzky would choose to go back to the Oilers.
If you're Gretzky and you want to go to a team, do you want an ownership stake? I mean, that's why he coached the Coyotes, is because he had an ownership stake in that team. Do you want to own a piece of the team, or are you happy just being...
Does it matter?
No, obviously financially it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But I mean, is that something you're looking for? Or you think
Darryl Cates is giving those guys carte blanche to do whatever they want anyways. Does it really matter if he has a financial stake in it? I mean, the Lowe's been doing what he wants for years.
And I don't think Edmonton or LA, is there a team right now where that's even an option?
Well, I mean, Darryl Cates might give him a cup. It doesn't really matter. Like, I mean, these guys have so much money, both of them. Does it even matter?
Yeah. No.
I called Darryl Cates and I said, could I have like half a percentage of the team? And he wasn't interested. You know that Jay-Z type of thing with the Nets?
You see, your problem was you just went into a Rexall pharmacy and started screaming at people there. That was the difference. It wasn't really asking so much as, you know, harassing staff. You know, it's an honest mistake. You know, I wrote down in the show plan, I had three questions here regarding this topic. Which team is the best fit for Gretzky? Which team do you think Gretzky will end up with? And which team needs Gretzky the most? Is it Edmonton for all three?
In my opinion, it makes the most sense for him to go to Edmonton and do all three. It really does. I think it's logical. I think they could use his help. I think there are pieces there to make the team. Obviously, they have a lot of skilled players. But the thing people understand about Gretzky, and they talk about the coaching all they want, he had a young team there. It was a difficult situation. But his ability to identify talent and identify trends and identify happenings on the ice is really second to none. So why would you not want to have him in an environment that he's comfortable with? Think about that. You drop him in there. Those guys are competitive enough that they want to win, but they're not going to be yes men at the same time. And I think it makes a lot of sense.
Right. And we talked about the relationships. He's good friends with Kevin Lowe, Craig McTavish, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't ignore that. And I think two of those three questions, I think, are obviously Edmonton. As far as where will he end up, that's a difficult one to answer, right? Because he might not end up with – he might decide to pursue – I think he will end up with a team. I don't think Wayne Gretzky right now is content on, you know, just living out the kind of life with his corporate partnerships and the kind of work that he does. And I, I'm not speaking for Wayne Gretzky, obviously.
I hope not.
But what I'm saying is, I think, you know, Richie touched on it earlier. Like, he's a guy that loves hockey so much, the history of hockey, what's happening right now. You don't think Gretzky's pumped up about the Olympics coming up?
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you he's talking to guys right now about, and they're asking Gretz, Iserman's asking Gretzky about players, and Ken Holland is, Gretzky is still in touch with the game. It's not like Gretzky's just sitting by a pool.
That's exactly right.
Kind of, you know, looking back and lamenting on,
so
on the 80s.
There's learning curve for him to get back into it. He can just jump right back in.
He follows the game closer than most people realize, and he can watch 10 games and know more about the game than most people who watch 500.
Right, and you have to listen to him because he knows what he's talking about.
That's right.
Not like me, who just kind of wins
random idiot off the street, really. Yeah. Let me ask, why not Toronto? I mean, we know how close...
I mean, how many more guys do they have in that management?
Well, that's going to be my question.
You have Dave Nonis, and you have Cliff Fletcher.
Are there just
have...
too many people, too many cooks in the kitchen in Toronto?
Yeah, there's no more room. And you know what? I know I think he knows Cliff Fletcher, and I know he knows all the guys. I mean, he's been around so long, and then he's so well respected. He knows everybody. But at the end of the day, what's his role going to be there? And who's going to be making the decisions? And if I'm Dave Nonis, I'm uncomfortable with it. If I'm Kevin Lowe or Craig McTavish, I'm welcoming it.
Because of the connections, these are
once
his boys.
Teammates, always teammates.
Yeah, you don't go through the number of wars that the Edmonton Oilers through without getting some sort of bond that's a little bit thicker than a straight win loss record.
And it's fun for them. It's, you know, it makes it a fun, it's a competitive and fun challenge. And I think those guys, and I agree, you know, as much as he talks about the corporate commitments, I think Wayne Gretzky would welcome a challenge again in his life for hockey to try and win another cup. He wants to fill the hands. He wants five.
Well, I mean, his kids are at that age where they're not in their, you know, really formative years anymore, so it does allow for a little more...
I would disagree with that. I think Paulina Gretzky's still in her formative years. I'm going to take a...
That's it. We're going to break. I can't beat that.
Big fan of hers on Instagram. Yeah.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. You can listen online at tsn1290.ca. Couple games in action in the NHL on this Wednesday evening. At the end of the first period, the Los Angeles Kings are up on the Toronto Maple Leafs by a 1-0 score. Drew Doughty getting the goal for the Kings, so they lead the Maple Leafs at Air Canada Center, and that's now, what, 7 periods that Martin Jones, the Kings goaltender, has gone without giving up a goal? So he's up to, he's on a hell of a streak right there, up to 140 minutes without giving up a goal for the Los Angeles Kings. The other game that's currently in action, Philadelphia at Chicago, and that game is scoreless about 5 minutes into the game. Remus, what? Oh, you're doing the score update.
This is the score update music.
Okay,
come on.
Right.
I feel like, is Steve Armander going to walk in the light blue jacket?
Yeah. Anyways, you ready for six things? No?
Six. There you go.
Six things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. Six.
Attaboy, Remus, right on the ball there. Rich, we'll start with you. Dallas Stars rookie forward Valeri Nichushkin is a man amongst boys when it comes to NHL rookies. He can do it all.
6'4", over 200 pounds, slipped to 10th overall in the draft. And when we were at the draft, the chatter on the floor was, where does this guy go? He's got real talent, but the Russian factor is an issue. The skill factor, the skill is not a question. He fell to 10, guys. And you watch him play, and if you watch him play at the beginning of the season, and if you watch him play recently, first off, he's made significant strides. Within 30 games of an NHL season, made significant strides. He's big. He plays big. He can skate. He can stick handle. He can shoot. I mean, this guy is a force in games right now. And you let him get a little more weight on him, a little more muscle, comfortable. You got to watch out because he didn't fall to 10 based on his skill level. He fell to 10 based on the factors that I just mentioned. And Jim Neal had the confidence that he would come over and he would play, and he said he was going to come over and play, and teams were scared off because of, they were scared because of the, you know, Russian players maybe not coming over, the KHL threat, all those other things. This is looking, it's early, I realize, but You can't teach that skill, and he's looking like a serious steal at 10 overall. Jim Neal with a great start to his tenure in Dallas.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but did he not have something in his sort of in his contract that stipulated he has to play in the NHL if he was going to come over to North America?
Yes, he can't go to the AHL, I believe you're correct.
Yeah, that was the sort of the red flag that was attached to him at the draft, but to the Dallas Stars go the spoils.
Seen him play?
Five.
Ezzie Ginsberg, we just mentioned him. That's Los Angeles Kings goaltender Martin Jones. He's helped to ease the mind of Kings general manager Dean Lombardi, who traded Jonathan Bernier to the Toronto Maple Leafs in the offseason.
Yeah, at this point on Hustler and Lawless, they had John Rosen, the LA Kings insider, and they were talking about him. At this point, he's got back-to-back shutouts, and everybody knows it, and it's really impressive. And the reason why I bring this up is because Ben Scrivens has been excellent, too. Look at Ben Scrivens' numbers, save percentage, goals against, whatever. He's been fantastic. When Jonathan Quick went down, I'll be honest, I was concerned. Ben Scrivens with the Toronto Maple Leafs, he was good in the AHL, Richie. But Ben Scrivens was, you know, scratching your head a little bit. You know, is he going to be good enough to be a backup? You're saying, okay, Jonathan Quick can play 70 games. He's a perennial Vezina candidate. But the reason why this is so nice is because Martin Jones is a 23-year-old, comes in, he's got two shutouts, and he, as you mentioned, they're beating the Leafs tonight. But he comes in, and Dean Lombardi can say, okay, now Jonathan Bernier's gone, but I've got two guys in the pipeline here. And you'd have to think that Scrivens is the guy, Richie, that probably won't get re-signed, because now Martin Jones is at 23 years old, can probably be a backup, and you know he can probably play a little bit more and be better. He's a better goalie, but I love Martin Jones. He was a former Canadian junior. He's a big guy, and he kind of reminds me a little bit of Jaguar, his style of play. And I think Lombardi now knows, and I think Lombardi, Richie mentioned last segment, he's a smart guy. He already knew what he had in Jones. Now he's just proving it, because I don't think he probably would have been the AHL if it wasn't for this injury, right? So it's great. Good for him.
You mentioned Ben Scrivens. He came over in the trade. Matt Fratton, the other guy who came over in the trade, can't even crack the Kings lineup a healthy scratch tonight.
Yeah, and Lombardi's talked about Matt Fratton and, you know, putting him on the different wing and maybe not putting him in the best situation to succeed. And he got down on himself, and he really hasn't gotten off to the start. You know, it's almost halfway through the season, but to the start that they wanted. I think they still have some hopes for him, but I don't think that would preclude them from making a trade.
Four. Richie, you have a thing for the rookies today. The Islanders' handling of Ryan Strome has been ideal from a developmental perspective.
Well, hasn't it? And you know what? When you think about Ryan Strome, you know, many fans will know him from, obviously, picked just before Mark Scheifele a couple seasons ago. But you also know him from the World Junior Championships. What I like about how they've dealt with Ryan Strome is they have him play two seasons in the OHL. So they say, okay, we're not going to rush him. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but we know he's skilled. We know he can skate. We know he can handle. We're gonna put him in the OHL. We're going to let him develop. They put him in 2 years in the OHL. So what they do is they save his entry-level contract years. They bring him up. They're burning an entry-level contract year this year. But instead of rushing him and throwing him into the fire, they put him in the AHL and say, play your way out of Bridgeport and we'll bring you up. What does he do? He plays 23 games in the AHL. He has 33 points. Leading scorer in the American Hockey League. They promote him when he's got confidence. He's had great success. They bring him to the National Hockey League and they're hoping he doesn't look back. But that is very much how you develop these guys. You make them earn it. And when they perform so well, you say, okay, now's your time to go. That's why so many of those guys like Getzlaff and Perry, Richards and Carter, that lockout year was great for their development. And look what the Islanders did here. They've done some things that I don't like. The trade for Vanek, but doesn't mean they do all things I don't like. I think this was a great move by them.
Ryan Strome will make his NHL debut tomorrow night in Phoenix for the New York Islanders.
Three.
Ezra Ginsberg, St. Louis Blues defensemen Jay Bouwmeester and Alex Pietrangelo receive a lot of attention, but Kevin Shattenkirk is arguably the team's best offensive defenseman and figures to play a prominent role for Team USA at the Olympics.
Yeah, it's quite possible that he's on the top pairing with Ryan Suter there. the goal yesterday wasn't pretty, but if you watch the entire game, Kevin Shattenkirk has this uncanny ability to jump in on the rush, and he's fantastic. And I think Alex Petrangelo, I should say, I think is an overall better defenseman. He'll obviously play for Team Canada, we expect, with Bomeister most likely on the second pairing. Mm-hmm. But Shattenkirk, guys, is incredible. And I think he's not as good defensively, but offensively, as I mentioned, I think that he has this knack, and I think Jacob Trouba has it as well, to create offense. He's only got 3 goals. He's got 22 points. He's top 5 in defenseman scoring right now. And I think once he starts to develop that shot a little bit more, he's still young. I think it's going to be incredible. And, you know, Richie, you mentioned Nikushkin, and you look at the trade now, Colorado giving up on Shattenkirk. They have three number one defensemen. Right, like they have so much talent. We've talked about this. I truly believe that the Blues have the best group of defensemen in the NHL. And Shattenkirk, he's a guy that, if you remember, in the 09 World Juniors, got 9 points for Team USA. He's very good, very talented, good skater. He'll be good on the open ice.
3 goals, 19 assists, 22 points in 28 games for Kevin Shattenkirk. And, of course, he got that third goal and the game-winning goal last night.
Second goal.
Sorry,
third goal of the game.
His third goal of the year.
Yes.
Second goal of the game, game-winning goal last night against the Winnipeg Jets here at MTS Center.
2.
Richard Pollock, the Oilers didn't add enough in the defense and goaltending department this offseason, or even the size department, but the trade for David Perron has proven to be a very nice move for Craig McTavish.
You know, guys, They set up, they had high expectations of bringing Dallas Eakins. He kind of sets even higher expectations, and it's been a disappointing year in Edmonton. I think there's no doubt about it. When you're out that early, Devan Dubnyk had a terrible start to the season. You end up bringing in Ilya Brizgalov. It's not something, you know, it's been a disastrous year. Let's call it how it is. But the trade for David Perron, and what you're trading is Magnus Pjärvi, a guy who's a good skater, bigger guy, but just doesn't have the hands to play top six.
It's been a healthy scratch for St. Louis.
Yeah. Can't crack the St. Louis lineup.
And a second-round pick. Look at that now. I mean, Perron is a shooter. He works at his game a lot. People saw him on After Hours, Hockey Night in Canada, I think last week. But talent. And you know what? He's got more talent than Pjärvi, and you'll trade the second-round pick. He's a young guy, and he's got talent. And I realize that St. Louis had a cap crunch and all that stuff. But you have to wonder if there's other teams in the National Hockey League who weren't aware of Perron's availability, or at minimum, regret not having been involved in those discussions.
It's amazing when you think about it. Yeah, 2 of the bigger trades in the offseason, you know, David Perron going from St. Louis to Edmonton, and Pjärvi going to St. Louis. And we mentioned earlier Bernier going to Toronto, and Fratton and Scrivens going to Los Angeles. Both Fratton and Pjärvi, key aspects of that trade, can't crack the lineups for either the Blues or the Kings. Just goes to show you how good those two teams really are.
1.
Ezra Ginsberg to wrap up 6 things this week. The Pittsburgh Penguins often don't get enough credit, but they are a model franchise for the way they develop and promote AHL talent.
Right, and Jason Botterill and his staff deserve a lot of credit here. You look at the Pittsburgh Penguins and the guys, they have the suspension to James Neal, but they have the injuries right now. Brooks Orpik is injured. But you look at the guys and you're saying, who's Zach Sill? Who's Chris Connor? Brian Demoulin was acquired in a trade. But the thing that I like about the Wilkes-Barre-Scranton Penguins and Pittsburgh Penguins, obviously, Wilkes-Barre's had a very good age.
Penguins in general.
Yeah, Penguins in general, whether it's in Antarctica or whatever. But if you look at how they bring along guys, Jason Megna is a guy that's actually been pretty good this year. We talked to Mike Colligan about that, who breaks down the Penguins. And what they do is they don't rush anybody. And what I like about what the Pittsburgh Penguins do, Richie, is that they'll give guy, and Eric Tangrady's a guy that kind of bounced around from the AHL back and forth. They'll give a guy 10 games filling in for an injury, and they'll send him back, and they'll give him his chance. They don't give anybody too much time. They don't rush. And they don't have, I would say, the high-end talent in the system that other teams do. But what they do is they bring up players at the right times. And I think a guy like Simon Dupre is another guy who's going to benefit from the time that he spent in the AHL, because he's had trouble cracking the lineup for the Pittsburgh Penguins. He's a guy that is very highly thought of in that system. But I think that they deserve a lot of credit for the way they've developed guys from the AHL to the NHL, and they do it right. They don't give a guy too much time, and they don't rush him. So I think they deserve a lot of credit.
there's something to be said based on this week's six things that there's something to be said for developing your players slowly and properly. This is NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. When we come back, we'll tell you about the Illegal Curve article of the week.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
So, welcome back to NHL Midweek. Last segment when we were talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins in six things we learned this week. At the end of the segment, as he says off air, did anybody else hear a strange noise in their headphones? And apparently, and I had no idea, Remus was playing penguin noises.
You're talking about penguins?
Yeah, I know. I get that we were talking about penguins. And just like, do you think people know what a penguin sounds like? Like it's a dog barking or something?
It's not like a seal.
It's not like a very noticeable, like, oh, well, that's obviously a penguin.
I don't know. I didn't know what a penguin sounded like.
This reminds me of the episode of The Simpsons where they're all in Ned's bomb shelter and they play Name the Farm Animal and it's just Mo making the noise of some random, like, screeching thing.
A baby ox?
Was it a baby ox?
Yeah, I think
ox?
It was. Yeah. Or okay. Maybe, yeah. Remember there was also an episode where they had manatees? Remember that episode?
I wasn't ever a big Simpsons fan.
Yeah, I never got that.
Yeah. I've seen quite a bit of episodes, but I've never been the biggest fan. I'm big into cartoons.
You're standing next to Ezra.
This is true.
Who's a bigger cartoon?
Simpsons is one thing, but if you don't like Seinfeld,
there you go.
Then that's just inexcusable. Well, how do you not like Seinfeld?
Who doesn't like Seinfeld?
There's people.
There are people out there who don't like Seinfeld.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Best show ever.
What about Curb?
That's also good.
Okay.
Let's move it along here.
Illegal Curve article of the week comes to us courtesy Amelie Benjamin of the Boston Globe. We'll tweet it out on our Twitter feed at Illegal Curve right now. And Amelie got some behind-the-scenes access to go to the NHL's Department of Player Safety while games are ongoing. So she got to see how the NHL and their various individuals who are in charge of player safety, we know Brendan Shanahan and Brian Leetch, apparently Stefan Kintel, Patrick Burke, there's a lot of guys who are involved in the operations there, and it really is an interesting article that takes you behind the scenes to how the NHL doles out player safety, how they analyze when it happens in the course of a game, and if they see something that sort of flags their attention, mm-hmm. how they deal with it the night of, leading up to the decision of when they eventually suspend a player or not. We'll tweet it out right now on our Twitter feed at Illegal Curve. Here's a good quote from the article that I thought really outlines sort of a lot of the raison d'etre that the NHL Department of Player Safety has.
Easy with the French there.
Sorry.
There,
Drew. Okay. Their mantra? How about mantra?
Well, it was nice.
Guiding philosophy?
You have a nice French.
Yeah, thank you. That transparency, this comes from Vice President of Player Safety, Damian Echevarrieta, who I haven't heard of, but that just might be me. He says, that transparency is also keeping ourselves honest. When we're on the fence about a play, we'll often say, can we make a video explaining why we're suspending this guy? And if the answer is no, then we don't suspend. I think that's a pretty decent way to go about it. Obviously, these videos are a relatively new thing in the last 3 years since Brendan Shanahan took over. But, you know, if they're sitting back in the Department of Player Safety and they're saying, look, we can't make a video to articulate why this guy should be suspended, then that's reasonable to not suspend him.
Right.
What I thought was interesting about the article, and we're going to get to that too later on, Drew, is, you know, when they talk about how the door's open for players to come in and see what the process is on a night-to-night basis, and they said, you know, Andrew Ferentz has gone in there, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. Rafi Torres
guy went in there.
Not unfamiliar with the Department of NHL Player Safety.
Yeah, and they're engaging the players in the process and understanding. And I think it gives credibility. I don't think this is necessary, but I think it gives credibility, even more credibility, that Shanahan was a power forward, not just a player, but a power forward, a guy who could mix it up, played a hard but clean game for the most part. And I think players respect Brendan Shanahan, and he's played recently enough that they don't not know who he is.
Oh,
which
sure.
is a concern as well, I think, sometimes, you know. So I think he's done a nice job, and I think the way the process that they're using now to provide information to these guys is very valuable. I thought the article is extremely informative. And it's a thankless job, though. And I bet you if Brendan Shanahan now explored the Calgary Flames opportunity that Brian Burke ended up taking, and I'm not sure if the role would have been the same for Brendan Shanahan, but it's a thankless job, and at some point he's probably going to want to move on. But I think in the meantime, he's doing a heck of a job taking over for Colin Campbell, who I also thought was interesting in the article, as who he defends, and saying that it takes guts to do what he did on the Mark Savard, Matt Cook hit.
Here's the quote.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hang on. Actually, I had the quote there a second ago, and now it just disappeared. Here it is. The controversial decision that Colin Campbell made to not suspend Matt Cook for hitting Mark Savard was a brave one in my mind, said Brendan Shanahan, because it didn't break a current rule in the NHL rulebook. And by taking the storm that followed, by not just making something up, he actually made a bigger impact on the game of hockey. 2 weeks later, there was a brand new rule for an illegal check to the head. He couldn't undo what happened to Mark Savard.
It's incredible, guys.
He can't play ever again.
Right, it's incredible. And, you know, Richie mentions that they touch on this in the article about Shanahan and how he defends Colin Campbell, but he couldn't do anything, Rich, and it is horrible. That hit was one of the worst we've ever seen. There's been some bad ones. That was one of the worst. But what he's doing, and if you look at the most recent suspension, which was Jared Cowan, you look at the videos.
Richard Panik just got 2 games while we were on air as well.
Richard Panik got 2 games. But you look at the Jared Cowan hit, and it was a hit to the head, and they explain it, Rich.
Yeah,
they show it from different angles, and they explain it very clearly. And I think when the videos came out through the NHL Department of Player Safety, people kind of made fun of it and, you know, whatever. But they're actually really good. They're very well done. Now anybody that has the internet can go on NHL.com. They explain it. You see it. You see it from different angles. And I thought it was interesting, too, that they talk about the process, and they send out emails to each other. And you kind of mentioned other guys like Stefan Quintel in addition to Brendan Shanahan. And they talk. And we talked about this before, but they can only really levy a certain amount of games for suspensions. And Shanny actually says in the article, I don't know if there's a pattern to this, because out of the 55,000 hits, I think he says, In a season, there might be 20 or something like that, or 30. I forget what I got it right here, but it might be something like that. 30 that are really hits to the head, right?
Right.
So, but that's too many. Ideally, you'd like to see maybe a couple every year. So are things changing? Are we going to see more respect in the NHL? Is there any point to this? I think there is.
Well,
I think that, you know, hockey is, we've talked about this a lot, it's an aggressive game. Hockey's a fast, aggressive game. You have guys swinging their sticks, getting their elbows up.
Well,
things are going to happen, but at the end of the day, if you look at it and you say, okay, Sean Thornton, wow, he's out for 12 games. Dion Phaneuf loses $66,000 for being suspended for 2 games.
Yes.
I mean, that affects you in the pocketbook, right? Sure, is it enough? Probably not. But if we see down the road things starting to get better, I'm an optimist. I'm glass half full. I do think that the respect is going to come back to the game, but I think maybe it's not happening, Richie, as quick as people want it to.
And Shanahan also talks about the youth and the fact that he can't get 24, 26, 28-year-old guys to come in because they just don't care, really.
Sure.
And
they think they're untouchable.
And that's another issue that, will that ever go away, guys? I mean,
well, but there's a point in the article where Shanahan says that he's not just doing it for the current players in the league, and I'll read that quote as well.
That's true.
The very glass is half full optimistic hope is that we get players coming into the NHL that understand, have a greater understanding and appreciation, respect for a player when his back is turned and he's near the boards, for body checking in a manner that isn't necessarily targeting another guy's head, Shanahan said. And I think the glass is half full hope is that when they come into the NHL, they've had fewer head injuries growing up because of this, that while they play in the NHL, they are healthier and that they leave the game healthy. And I think there is something to be said for the idea that those videos will do that, because, you know, young hockey players may not know without a video why is that hit incorrect. But now with the video showing, you know, this player's had his head targeted with a shoulder to the head or an elbow to the head, it's crystal clear. You come into the league now, you know that that's not going to be allowed, and you've seen videos of it for years saying why it's not allowed.
Richie mentioned separating the forward from the puck, you know, talking about Brooks Orpik on Louis Erickson. That's what you're taught as a defenseman. That's the purpose of body checking. You're not just hitting a guy that doesn't have the puck, you know, WWE style. I mean, body checking, you look at a guy like Alex Petrangelo or Drew Doughty, they're some of the best in the game at it. And so you want to see younger kids, kids that are teenagers that are about to turn pro or similar age players, and you want to see them seeing that, and that's what they're trying to do, and not hit a guy from behind. Dion Phaneuf, you know, I have all the respect for him. He's the captain of the Leafs. He's a good player. I know maybe his offensive numbers, but what's he doing there? I mean, he's clear. It was a clear hit from behind, and you can't not suspend a guy for that. Well, and you know, that's something where you could break a guy's neck.
But there's two things. The hits from behind, I hate. I hate them as much as, if not more than anything. The problem is all these players keep turning their back to the boards. When you watch the video, when you're learning to play hockey, you watch the videos and teaching you about hitting from behind. My dad used to show us all the time. And half of it was on the guy, was talking about how you're not supposed to hit the guy from behind. The other half of the video was talking about how you're not supposed to get hit from behind and showing you how to skate up to the boards, how to get the puck. Now players are so worried about protecting the puck that they put themselves in harm's way, and the guy who's going to run him is he turn to the last second and boom, it's hit from behind. So the players have to have a responsibility for that as well.
Sure. I mean, nowadays, you're right. You know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you would never see a player with his back turned to the play with, you know, a foot and a half, 2 feet away from the boards, because that guy would, you know that you're going to get your neck broken or putting yourself in a vulnerable position.
Also, you can't interfere now, right? At all.
Right.
So the speed of the game is faster than ever, if not too fast.
Well, that's what it is, Richie. The speed. We've all played hockey and watched tons of hockey. When you turn your body and put yourself in a vulnerable position right at the same second that a guy is coming at you full speed, you increase the chances of getting boarded or checked from behind exponentially. And there is something to be said about that. It's about education. That's coaching and everything like that. But I again, to maybe wrap this up a little bit, I do think this season that we are kind of seeing a tipping point and things are starting to get better. I do think we're always going to have violent incidents in hockey, but I do think that things are going to eventually get better, because I think fans are seeing this stuff and they're saying it's enough of this. I mean, these guys don't respect each other. Let's get the respect back, and that's what it's all about, right?
Yeah, a lot of these issues aren't necessarily fighting.
No, there are a lot of the hits to the head, like the shoulders and the elbows to the head. The article's great. It's by Amelie Benjamin.
She's a great writer.
On the Boston Globe, she covers the Bruins, and we tweeted it out on our Twitter feed, @LegalCurve.
She's not as good a writer as you are, Drew, but she's...
Thanks,
she's
I appreciate
close.
That.
She's close. You have you do great haikus and everything. Drew's released poetry.
What the hell are you talking about?
Do you want me to send you some of the speeches I've written for over my years?
I'd enjoy that, yes.
Okay, yeah, I'll send you the hand cert of it.
So, you know, Martin Luther King had a dream. Drew is, I had ice cream.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek. One final segment for this Wednesday evening. You know it. You love it. It's called Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire starts with a breaking news story from the studio here.
Yes.
You know.
Literally breaking.
Literally breaking. Breaking, chipping, cracking. Last segment.
This isn't real.
Well, this is real, because we're seeing it happen right before our very eyes.
Reem, let's get Reem to explain.
Let me explain what happened first, Ezzy.
Let Reem go.
We're having our discussion last segment about the article, about, you know, player safety. Little did we know we needed a discussion about producer safety. Remus is here. You know, some people lose a tooth playing hockey, you know, doing something athletic. Some people chip their tooth biting their nails. Michael Remus, you're one of those people.
Yeah, I mean, these are teeth that have been, I guess, fake or capped, whatever, since I was in grade 6, and, you know, it's a bad habit that some people have. I have this habit that I chew my nails occasionally, because I don't have nail clippers on me, And I was doing that, and I heard a crack, and I knew right away that I had chipped my tooth.
And you were at the dentist earlier today.
I was at the dentist earlier today for a cleaning, and this is actually not the most unusual way I have chipped. You see, there's just a little piece in the middle.
You okay, man?
Can you describe,
no,
can
I'm
you describe
so
the most unusual way that you've chipped your tooth before?
I have chipped it before biting into an apple.
That doesn't seem that unusual.
Yeah,
the most unusual.
You eating fruit is unusual,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. That's unusual.
The most unusual way I've done it, I'm sorry, I sound really as depressed as Jay Richardson during a visiting team goal, but oh my God.
Chip tooth, 7:45.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's rapid fire, not slow fire. Let's go here.
Okay. I chipped it sneezing.
Wow. Let's get next topic.
Sneezing.
Okay. This is too much.
Fortunately,
this is depressing.
On Saturday, yeah. Dr. Les Rikus is going to be on the show.
Yeah, we'll get him to take a look at Remus's
so
mouth.
So we'll get, you know, talking about the importance of mouth guards and everything. Yeah. I guess we'll have to ask him about people wearing mouth guards while producing radio shows.
Yeah, good question.
Yeah,
I bet Les Rikus didn't think that he'd actually be performing
a root canal on air. Yeah. Well, you know, you never know what's going to happen here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show or NHL Midweek. Rather,
are you okay?
Yeah, I forgot.
Holy.
Are you mad, bro?
No, I'm not. Lots of starting goaltenders have gone down with injury so far this season. Corey Crawford is the latest to join the ranks of the injured, as he will be out 2 to 3 weeks with a lower body injury. Of the NHL teams that have a clear-cut number one goaltender, who is the best backup in the NHL? Now, I'm not talking about the teams that have a 1A and a 1B.
Okay.
The guys who have a Lundqvist or a Quick or a Niemi or a Crawford, who has the best backup?
It's tough to say right now, right? Like, you've got
What? That's why I asked.
Well, you always say that. I mean, it's a tough question. And, you know, you can look at Anaheim. They've got lots of good goalies there. And you look at the LA Kings right now. You can make an argument that Scrivens and Jones. I would probably say right now, I would probably say a guy like Fast on Anaheim.
Well, I don't know. That's not a 1A, 1B situation, has he? I'd probably say Peter Budaj based on this year. I mean, has he not been great?
Ever since he really got to Montreal, him and Carey Price have fit together perfectly.
I mean, Peter Budaj, I think if you're not talking 1A, 1B, I think Peter Budaj is a clear second guy. And I think he's probably been the best backup in the league over this season for sure.
Enroth is another guy that's a really good backup. Kudobin. Peters right now is subbing in for Cam Ward. He's another guy that is probably a good backup.
Carolina doesn't want to lose a goalie to waivers right now, so they're keeping three guys on the roster.
That's exactly right, because they have Kudobin, who they got in the offseason from Boston, and of course Cam Ward.
And they know the Islanders, I think Ali Freeman wrote about it, they know the Islanders are going to swoop in and grab a goalie if one hits the wire.
That's right. Speaking of goaltenders, Philadelphia Flyers goaltender Steve Mason is enjoying a career renaissance this season after struggling for the past few seasons in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
He signed a one-year contract with the Flyers in the offseason worth $1.5 million. Mason will be an RFA this offseason, and recently Chris Mason's agent Anton Thun, he's been on the show before,
yes,
remarked to CSN Philadelphia that he thought Carey Price's six-year $39 million contract was a good starting point for negotiations for Steve Mason. What do you think Steve Mason will sign for, dollars and years, in his next contract?
2 years, $8 million, and that's pretty high. 2 years, $8 million. I mean, Anton Thun, I mean, speaking of high, I mean, that contract topic, I mean, Steve Mason, the season with Hitchcock and Columbus, and this season's been great, but let's not get crazy here. He's obviously, you know, I think saying that a little bit tongue-in-cheek, and as he's been great this year, there's no doubt about that, but you're looking at another two-year deal. They're not sold on him yet. I cannot see. Although, if there's one team to be completely ridiculous and sign him for way too much money and for way too much term, it would be Philadelphia.
Yeah, it would probably be 2 or 3 years. And at $1.5 million, I think we'd all agree that that's a pretty good signing for the Philadelphia
Absolutely.
Flyers, because Steve Mason has been really good. So it's probably not going to be 5 or 6 years. But I wouldn't be surprised if they like him and they say, and Steve Mason, you'd have to believe, isn't going to want to sign another one-year deal. He's going to probably want a little bit more security. So yeah, 2-3 years, around the $3 to $4 million range, I would say.
Last night in Florida, the world of hockey got a chuckle at the expense of the Panthers when, after a pane of glass broke, the maintenance crew put up a new pane of glass with the non-transparent wrapper still attached. Today, the Panthers explained that the original replacement pane of glass, with its wrapper removed, cracked when it was dropped. With NHL officials rushing the maintenance crew along, the crew didn't have time to take the wrapper off the third pane of glass. Given this explanation, how long could it possibly take for a wrapper to be removed from an NHL pane of glass?
Well, I don't want to be a pain in the glass, but the thing is, I don't. That's very corny. But
you're kidding.
How long should it take? What's the question again?
Yeah, how long could it possibly take to remove a wrapper from a pane of glass?
A wrapper? I don't know. Sometimes, you know, it's it's tough to remove the wrapper.
Sticky.
And it's like opening a bag of chips. Yeah, your hand, you get nervous, you start shaking, and then if you're like me, and
three, 4 minutes.
I have no idea the answer.
They get more attention because of it. Eh? It's a good publicity. You're talking about it.
Yeah. Well, that's right. I certainly wouldn't be talking about the Florida Panthers otherwise.
I think, can we agree that the best time any a fan ever like a every, glass incident was the, they're showing it right now on TSN when the Philly fan comes over the glass and Domi pins him there, that was the best thing ever.
I don't know, but I heard that some of the Jets fans in the front row were asking that the cover be put on the glass yesterday,
so they didn't have to watch the game.
Well, that's not good.
That's it for this Wednesday at NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. We remind you that Saturday morning, it's an early start time for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 8 a.m. on this fine station. We'll have a couple guests already booked. Frank Provenzano is going to join us. He's going to join us every month, the second Saturday of every month, starting this coming Saturday. So he's a former Dallas Stars assistant general manager. So with the Jets and the Stars playing, we certainly know a lot about that team, and we'll talk to Frank about that.
I thought Jesse the intern was going to come on here.
Well, Jesse, we'll have you
Saturday?
On Saturday for sure.
Okay, it will be on early.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
We'll have some
right early.
Going.
See, can you wake up for 8 a.m.?
You wake up for 8 a.m., you might beat Desi here.
Yeah, it's true. You might be. No. Yeah.
I will be here. I guarantee you I beat Remus here.
His first job on Saturday is to wake Desi up in time for the show. Anyways, for producer Michael Remus, for Jesse the intern, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Wednesday, it's NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.